Good morning. It is 9 o'clock. We will call the meeting of the March 2nd, 2022 Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors meeting to order. We always start off with our Pledge of Allegiance. And Director Armstrong, would you like to lead us in the pledge this morning?
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I ask the board secretary to call the roll of the directors and to go over the protocol, since we are now webcasting our meetings, to go over that protocol for us?
Yes. Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Director Record?
Here.
And President Pauly is here, as well as our legal counsel. Mm-hmm. I will go ahead and review the guidelines for virtual participation in EMWD board meetings. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking.
Thank you very much. April, do we have any guests or anybody wishing to do public comment with us this morning?
No one has indicated their desire to provide comments.
Very good. And then we have no one on the phone for public comment.
That is correct.
Very good. Thank you so much. With that, we'll go on to our general manager's report. Good morning, Mr. Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packet under new and ongoing items. On February 17th, we held our quarterly coordination meeting with the County Riverside staff, and we had a productive discussion. We covered a lot of items. Notably, we discussed the county's American Rescue Plan Act funding and the desire to partner with the EMWD on infrastructure projects, specifically in disadvantaged communities and other areas as well. We were pleased to hear that Supervisor Jeffries will be recommending participation in EMD's projects in the Good Hope and Mead Valley area with the county's participation at $5 million towards those projects. And also late yesterday, we did hear back from Supervisor Washington's team that they also will be recommending to the Board of Supervisors consideration to participate in EMWD's projects at a proposed level of $10.5 million, a number of projects including infrastructure projects in wine country. So we're very pleased with how the process is advancing with the County of Riverside. Again, the intent is for the county staff to take these recommendations to the Board of Supervisors either later this month or possibly in April. And as those approvals are secured and those participation agreements are developed, we will be bringing those items back to this board for discussion and consideration. We're also working with the county staff on Supervisor Jeffries' division, and a list of projects has been put forward by our team for consideration. The next item I wanted to update you on is on February 23rd, we held our inaugural City of Paris ad hoc committee meeting. Director Slauson and Director Armstrong participated, representing EMWD. Mayor Vargas and Council Member Rita Rogers represented the city. It was a very productive discussion. We covered a number of issues as part of the consideration for consolidation of the water and sewer system, including evaluation of groundwater rights, condition assessment of the city's water and sewer system, and the potential transfer of real property assets, and as well as initial assessment of the legal provisions associated with a potential transfer of the city's water and sewer system to EMWD. This process with the city is anticipated to extend approximately 12 months. We have to undertake several assessments. In fact, later this morning, we will bring forward for your consideration contracts with consultants to be able to advance that condition assessment process, as well as the groundwater rights valuation effort. Our intent is to hold quarterly ad hoc committee meetings, and our next meeting with the city is scheduled for June, and we will keep the board updated as we advance this effort with the city. Next item on my report is the Metropolitan Water District budget workshop. On February 22nd, the Finance and Insurance Committee, chaired by Director Record, had its second workshop on the proposed Metropolitan budget for fiscal year 22-23 as well as 23-24. The workshop focused on the biennium capital investment plan as well as unfunded priorities and other follow-up items from the first workshop. Metropolitan's CIP program is estimated at $600 million over the biennium, and I've identified some of the priorities in my report that Metropolitan plans to undertake. Unfunded priorities focus primarily on 81 additional positions requested by various departments. Currently, the draft Metropolitan budget is proposing an overall 8% rate increase for both 2023 and 2024. During the last budget process, Metropolitan was forecasting an overall increase of 5% for 2023, which was the increase that we used in our latest budget and rate adoption for the upcoming fiscal year. So when we look at the impact of the proposed 8% increase by Metropolitan for 2023, that impacts our six-month balance of that year. And our finance team, I know Laura Nomura, John Adams, and others have been involved in looking at the impact of the proposed Metropolitan budget. We're currently estimating that impact during the last 6 months of 2023 at $1.3 million, and that may be accommodated from our reserves. Beyond that, we are planning to come before this board at the next board meeting and recommend a updated cost of service study for water and sewer rates. And as part of that study, we will incorporate what ultimately is adopted at the Metropolitan Water District, and that will help us put forward recommendations for the 2024 and 2025 rates. Obviously, we are very much engaged with Metropolitan on this process. Myself, as I mentioned, Laura, John, and Jolene are very much part of the effort to support Director Record in reviewing of the budget, and there's a series of additional workshops at Met that we will be participating in. Under items of interest to the board, I wanted to share with you that on February 24th, during the Colorado River Aqueduct shutdown, representatives from Metropolitan as well as EMWD measured the water seepage flowing out of the San Jacinto Tunnel. The flow measured equated to approximately 4,400 acre-feet per year, which is consistent with last year's measurement. Per the agreement with the Metropolitan Water District, that 4,400 acre-feet will be credited to EMWD. We should be receiving formal notice of that in April timeframe. And finally, I wanted to share with the board, as you have probably noticed during the board meetings over the last many months, there's been soil export operations taking place from our North Trumbull stockpile. I am pleased to report that that operation has been completed as of February 18th. In total, we exported 1.15 million cubic yards of material to various locations. A portion of that material, about 180,000 cubic yards, were utilized to construct the pads needed for our solar phase 3 project. The balance of the material was used and sold to development needs for residential and commercial projects within our service area. Final grading has been completed at the North Trumbull site, and in the next 2 weeks we'll be applying a soil binder for dust mitigation. Overall, we generated more than $400,000 in revenue from the sale of the excess material, as well as satisfying the needs of the surrounding community that wanted us to remove the stockpile. Finally, I just want to share with the board that over the next several days, I'll be in San Antonio, Texas, participating in the National Water Reuse Board strategic meetings and workshops, as well as attending a portion of the Water Reuse Conference. I will be accessible, and if anything arises, you can always contact me on my cell phone. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
Any questions? Director Record, any questions for Joe?
No questions. Thank you, President Pauley.
Joe, I appreciate update from the county. I think that's good, but reminded me as I look across here, I would still like to talk to the county about seeing if we could help them with some of the non-functional turf. When you mentioned looking out and seeing the trucks go by, I did. I keep seeing the non-functional turf over there, so if we could perhaps.
That's an excellent point, President Paul. In fact, during our discussion with the county staff, including Mr. Juan Perez, their COO, mm-hmm. we mentioned the issue that you brought up, as well as the fact that we are advancing additional measures for non-functional turf management. In fact, later this morning, we'll be bringing forward to you a resolution for your consideration. So we decided to add that item for our next quarterly meeting with the county staff to talk about it at length. But I appreciate the feedback, and we're going to have that conversation with the county.
I'm sure there's lots of non-functional turf on county facilities, but in this case, we happen to look across from it. So just wanted to add that in.
Thank you.
Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Yes, just one item. So as the board's aware, we applied for state reimbursement for our water arrearages where we collected $3.6 million back. Last week, we applied for now our wastewater arrearages, which covers the period of March 4th through June 15th, 2021, and it does cover all of our residential and commercial wastewater accounts. We applied for almost 8,700 accounts for a total amount of $1.8 million. It does include a 3% administrative cost for us to put that together. We anticipate that funds will be distributed by the end of the month. So we look forward to receiving those, and we'll report back at that time. I just did want to provide that we do still have a current outstanding balance over 60 days of about $6.3 million. We did hear from Danielle this week that there is talks at the state level that they could extend the COVID period date out to December 31st. So we're hoping for that because that will help with that balance, and we'll keep the board informed if that should come to fruition.
I have a question for you on that, sure. Laura. So would if we receive that amount for the wastewater, would that make us whole for that period of time?
For that period of time, I believe so.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Great.
Very good. Thank you so much. Nick, do you have anything for us this morning?
Yes, I do have one item I'd like to share with you. Late last year, Joe Maud and myself met with Ivan Holler, Assistant City Manager with the City of Murrieta. He wanted to sit down with us and talk about, you know, what it would take to potentially provide water service to a small community that's outside Eastern Service areas, just off of Los Alamos and the 215, about a mile east of Los Alamos, sandwiched between Los Alamos and Mary Place Drive. It's a community of about 40-plus properties, large acreage properties, and last year some of them were experienced. They're all on groundwater wells, and some of the properties were experiencing low groundwater, and potentially some of those groundwater wells going dry. So we discussed what it would take as far as an extension of Eastern's water system to serve that community. We recognize it's not in our service area, so it would entail a fringe area annexation, and there's costs and fees associated with that. So it was a good meeting. He was very appreciative of the discussion and the information we shared. Earlier this week, Monday of this week, I received a call from Ivan again. And he informed me that he is seeking council approval, may already have that under his belt, to allocate about $3 million of ARPA funding towards this. So we're going to be sitting down with Ivan and other staff here at the district to explore what that would take and look at an implementation plan. So I want to give you a heads up of that. And as we learn more and figure out what that path forward is, we'll share that with you. Any questions on that?
Would the $3 million, would that include building our infrastructure into an area, or is that just the annexation fees?
Well, the $3 million is just what they're targeting to set aside. What we need to do now is sit down and see big picture of what it will take, inclusive of the infrastructure to bring the water service in, as well as LAFCO and annexation fees associated with that. So we need to pencil all that out. When we met with him the first time around, there were a number of options we were looking at as far as how far we want to expand the system. So obviously he'd like to do more than less. So we need to sit down and look at the funding that's available and what it would take and right-size the project so that it satisfies everybody.
Okay. Now, I have talked to a few council members from Murrieta about that area. And when we have more information, I'd love to maybe do a future board presentation on, when you have a lot more information on it, because that is of interest.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not in our district boundary. Is it in Met's district boundary?
No. So it would include
a
Met as well as an Eastern annexation.
And I just wanted to clarify, President Pauly, the $3 million that the city has identified, I think the intent here is to cover the cost of annexation as well as the infrastructure.
Okay.
But we need to right-size the project, as Nick indicated. So we'll be sitting down and trying to figure out how to best use those funding to deliver a solution to the residents.
Okay. No, I think it's of interest. I know myself and probably Director Armstrong, too, and Director Corona.
Is this the area east of the sports park on Los Alamos?
It is.
Yes.
So our facilities kind of get to the sports park. Beyond that, it's...
Yeah, we looked at our facility kind of gets right to Los Alamos, and then we would have to extend it kind of northeast of Los Alamos, potentially loop around these 40-odd parcels, and that's what we're looking at.
I know last year they had some severe issues with the wells, and so.
Well, I don't think that area typically has a lot of water, even in good times.
So, all right, we'll look forward to more on that. Appreciate it, Nick. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly. Good morning, members of the board. I'm happy to report this morning that we have completed construction on the Sky Canyon Sewer Project 6 months ahead of schedule. This project installed a 36-inch diameter sewer pipeline along Sky Canyon Drive from Murrieta Hot Springs Road to Borrell Road and along Winchester Road. This construction project was not without challenges. We had deep excavations ranging from 20 to 40 feet, as well as a jack and bore operation across Murrieta Hot Springs Roads and the Riverside County Flood Drainage Course. Despite those challenges, impacts to our businesses and residents in that area were significantly mitigated by the outstanding efforts by our PGA team, as well as a well-coordinated traffic control plan. And that outreach, I feel like, was reinforced this week with a letter that President Pauly signed that was sent to the residents and businesses in the area, expressing our appreciation for their patience and their understanding through the process, and notifying them that the project was indeed complete.
Excellent. No, I want to echo all of that. That was a project that had lots of potential pitfalls to it, and from what I can tell, we had none. So that was a good job from April and her team. I think our contractor on that was outstanding, the job that they did, the traffic controls, what you managed. So anyway, thanks, everyone. It was an important project for the French Valley area, and I am thrilled that it's complete. I see some kids now with their bicycles out there thinking, where'd that cool mountain of dirt go that we used to ride up on, which I'm glad we never had any incidents with, but that was a lot of dirt to move. So thank you very much. Matt, anything this morning?
Good morning. I have nothing for this week.
Very good. With that, we will go to item 3 on our agenda, which is our consent calendar. I know, Director Corona, you have...
I have a conflict on item F.
On item F. Okay. Does any other directors have any other questions on the consent calendar or needs to pull an item or have a conflict?
I just want to bring your attention. I believe it's item E.
You're right.
Director Record, any concerns on the consent calendar?
No, I'll move the consent calendar.
We'll move the consent calendar minus item E. I will second the motion on the consent calendar. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crono?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. We'll ask Director Crono if he would like to leave the dais. And I will make a motion on item E. Would you like to second Director Armstrong?
Sure.
Very good. We may I get a roll call vote on item E, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent from the vote. Director Corona has rejoined us. That will take us to our action calendar, item A, which is to adopt proposed resolution of issuance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District acting as the legislative body of Community Facilities District number 2019-83 Winchester Ridge, authorizing issuance of the 2022 special tax bonds, approving bond documents as to form. Thomas, good morning.
Morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Thankful for the opportunity to come before you today, present this item. It's related to a CFD bond issuance for CFD number 2019-83 Winchester Ridge. The CFD was formed in March of 2020 to finance Eastern water and sewer improvements. It was authorized to issue bonds in an amount not to exceed $10.5 million, and it was secured by special tax revenues. The CFD is located in an unincorporated area of the county known as Winchester, a couple miles east of the city of Menifee and west of Diamond Valley Lake. As development continues to push east of the city of Menifee, we've seen several developments occur off Domagoney Parkway. In this map here, you can actually see a few of our recent bonded CFDs, as well as a couple older CFDs. The CFD that we're discussing today is outlined in yellow, and it incorporates approximately 230 gross acres. This CFD, as well as these other CFDs, are in President Pauly's division, and the development is planned for 376 homes and to be developed by D.R. Horton. It's a master plan community known as Winchester Ridge. It's planned for a diverse group of homes between 2,000 and 3,000 square feet, 3 to 5 bedrooms, both 1- and 2-story homes. We had an appraisal conducted in December. With the data value December, the appraisal came in at $180.5 million. The development activity on the third bullet represents a development activity at that time. Homes in this area continue to sell very fast, experience very strong demand, and we've been in close communication with the developer. Just Monday, we had a due diligence call with the underwriter bank, as well as the developers and district staff, and we received some updated development information. At the time the appraisal was conducted, it looked like D.R. Horton was going to own more than 20% of the homes, and per the district's debt policy, would be required to post a letter of credit. With the strong demand and the pace of the home sales, they're projected to be very close to that 20% threshold at the time of bond sale, which I'll go over the schedule in a couple more slides. We've been in close communication, as I've mentioned. 11 homes are expected to close within a week, and an additional 26 homes by the end of the month. Because of the rapid development with the home sales and the closings, we're not going to expect them to post a letter of credit ahead of our pricing, and our pricing date is currently within a couple of days scheduled, just depending on market conditions. We're comfortable knowing that the D.R. Horton's sales and close of escrows will bring them below the 20% threshold in time. Based on the appraisal and the current data, the value-to-lien ratio, very healthy, 21.4 to 1. Delinquency levels are very low at just 0.55%. The effective tax rate, well under the district's required maximum the maximum of 2%, and it's coming in at 1.62%. As I mentioned, the number of homes, 376, very large development. Bonds in the future may only be issued for refunding purposes. This will be the only new money issuance for this development. Projected par amount is $7.8 million, and this will be premium bonds, so we'll be generating additional proceeds to the tune of $8.4 million. The TIC on this one is estimated 3.56%. We've seen a little bit of upward pressure on rates just because of market conditions, volatility, international conflicts, expectation for Fed funds to increase rates. So we've seen the TIC come up a little bit as compared to recent bond issues. Looking ahead to the schedule, we had our due diligence on Monday. We're seeking board approval today, and then we'll be posting the preliminary official statement tomorrow. Bond pricing subject to change, by a couple of days, just depending on market conditions for that week. The Fed funds meeting is also scheduled for that week, so we'll be definitely keep an eye out. It's expected that things are priced in already, expecting the interest rates to be increased, but we'll be in great communication with the team, making sure that we get the best financing terms available. Speaking of the team, we have our great special funding team on this project. Really appreciate all the work that they've done with this. The underwriter team for this project was selected for Stifel Nicholas & Company. And as I mentioned, the appraisal was conducted by Stephen G. White, one of the district's approved appraisers. Bond closing will occur just a couple weeks after pricing, currently scheduled for the end of the month. Recommendation for today is for the board to adopt proposed resolution authorizing the issuance of the bonds in an amount not to exceed $8.5 million, approve the related documents, and authorize the district team to affect all the services necessary for the issuance of the bonds. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions, Director Armstrong?
Thomas, so as I'm learning more about the CFDs and our policy, I just want to go back to the 20% and the 80%. The district, even though the CFD is formed, we won't issue the bonds and finance it until 80% of the homes have been developed unless the developer wants to post a letter of credit. Is that?
Two different things, and I'll clarify. So the district won't issue bonds until there's significant development progress. There's no magic percentage that we look for. Just for the health of the CFD, for the health of the issuing debt and having the homeowners pay for that, the district and its debt policies, we won't issue bonds on just land, and we really want to see the progress of the development. It's independent of the 80-20%, which I'll touch on in just a minute. But, yes, we do issue bonds once significant progress has occurred. It's better credit. The bonds sell better, and it's just healthier to distribute that across, more owners. In regards to the 20%, the district's debt policy requires that the developer or the landowner post a letter of credit if more than 20% is owned by the landowner. So whether or not the development has occurred up to 80%, the percentage that's owned by the landowner or developer can't exceed 20%. The reason for that is if they run into some cash flow issues, have trouble paying the debt, and they make up such a large component of that, the 20%, then the letter of credit adds some assurity in case there's any issues and there won't be any defaults for that project. Now, when it's close, in this case, we look at the size of the developer, we look at all of the activity that they've done, recent home sales, where things are trending, take in a lot of inputs, look at it, make it make sense, make sure where our comfort level is, discuss with our bond counsel, our financial advisor, the full team, and then make that determination. Because they're so close, we could technically push the pricing off a couple of weeks. In the case of the market conditions, rates, expectations for what the Feds are going to do, the Russia-Ukraine conflict, it doesn't really make sense to push that pricing any further. So we're really going to capture the best time to price the bonds and then also look at the requirements for the letter of credit. Because they're so close, we've discussed it with our bond counsel, decided to waive the requirement.
Thank you. I mean, clearly there's some judgment involved in this, but I think the policy that's in place and that approach really does help minimize risk to everybody. And so I think it's a really good aspect. I would make a motion to approve the item too.
We've got a motion by Director Armstrong. Director Record or any other directors have questions on this item?
I'll second it.
Director Record has seconded. Can I ask one just?
Yeah, of course.
Just clarify to be very clear on our policy that we're not, I don't like judgment calls when we have a policy. So the 20%, they're going to be very close when you go to price these. Is that, or they will have exceeded our current policy that the board set, correct?
Yes, correct. So it's within 1 to 2 percentage points, which is really only a couple of homes. Mm-hmm. And to dive into the 20%, it's not just the number of homes, because the taxes are based on size of the home, size of the lot, and so it really depends on the number of homes that they own and the size of those units and what portion of the tax. So we don't want, per the policy, for them to be over the 20% of the taxable amount, and so it's going to be within 1 to 2 percentage of our requirement. You know, as I just mentioned, we could push back the pricing a couple of days to be in the clear, but because of the market conditions, you know, we're not expecting to move back the pricing.
I understand that. I guess where I get a little concerned is when this board sets a policy and then we get what I call policy creep, where we start to get away from the policy. So in this case, I have a lot of faith in our financing team, but I always like to keep an eye on when a board has set a policy here at Eastern that we don't get too much policy creep. So,
and President Paul, I just want to say this is obviously an unusual circumstance, and as such, we wanted to make sure the board is aware of it. But as discussed, we don't believe there's risk in accommodating that 1% or so differential. But clearly, we wanted to bring it to the board's attention, but we feel this would be appropriate.
I appreciate that. So we've had a motion and a second. Make it a roll call vote, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. Thank you so much, Thomas, on that. We will go to item B, which is to approve and authorize adoption of proposed resolution for policy goals for water use efficiency and non-functional turf management. And Danielle, are you going to present this today?
I am.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. Danielle Coates, Senior Policy and Government Affairs Manager. This morning, for discussion, we will be covering a resolution addressing water use efficiency and non-functional turf management policy goals for Eastern Municipal Water District. On occasion, Eastern advances policy goals by way of a resolution, which is especially helpful when the issue or effort touches multiple departments throughout the district in order to provide a strategic focus on an issue or area. This has been the case when we advanced policy recommendations on a whole host of areas, such as when we did the consolidation of the County Water Company of Riverside, along with the effort to address gray water systems in our service area. So it's not uncommon that we choose this direction. In thinking through forthcoming water use efficiency initiatives and investments, along with the appropriate means for addressing non-functional turf in our region, it is recognized that we hadn't circled back to the board in quite some time on specific issues related to non-functional turf since we came before you to secure a resolution to advance legislation through AQUA. Further recognizing that Eastern has a long history of leadership in water use efficiency, initiatives and thinking about opportunities going forward to address such efforts, we wanted to put non-functional turf in context of all of our good work to date. So for today's presentation, I'm going to walk through some of our leadership on water use efficiency. I'm going to talk about the resolution, the content, and its purpose. And then finally, I'll talk about an overview of the next steps that we anticipate taking if the resolution is adopted for today. No surprise to any of us here today is the fact that water is a limited resource, and Eastern has made significant investments over time to advance a water supply portfolio and bring local projects online, recycling and utilizing 100% of our recycled water, or our wastewater collected for beneficial reuse, and we treat and utilize brackish groundwater, which would otherwise be too salty to drink. These investments have allowed Eastern to be more self-reliant and better prepared to address cyclic drought conditions. In addition to advancing new projects, Eastern has been a leader in conservation and water use efficiency, which has helped us to maximize our diverse water supply portfolio. Since the early 2000s, Eastern has made strategic investments in not only advancing infrastructure and water supply projects. We've been actively at the table to ensure that this growing region has the water necessary to support the growth and collaborate with regional partners to share our knowledge and on water use efficiency and coordinate on innovative initiatives. In early 2000, under then-Supervisor Marion Ashley, the Riverside County Water Task Force was formed, and our very own director, Randy Record, was the first chair of the task force. And one of the first projects that the task force put together was a locally developed update to the county's Model Water Use Efficiency Landscape Ordinance. The legislation that initiated the Model Water Use Efficiency Landscape Ordinance effort allowed for the development of locally developed water use efficiency ordinances that met the standard of being as stringent as the state model. The task force took on this challenge, and Eastern was very much in a leadership role throughout the development of the local effort. And the very first, and through this effort, the very first EMWILO was developed and adopted by the County of Riverside and further developed and adopted are further adopted by every city in Riverside County. Through the implementation of EMWILO, we disallow installation of new non-functional turf in front yards and have further made progress on new development and commercial strips. In 2002, Eastern decided to look inward to ensure that the district was leaning in to conservation and supporting the asks that we were making of our customers. Looking at the more than 9 acres of non-functional turf that at the time we had surrounding our headquarters, we sought to make investments in demonstrating that we were serious about the issue of conservation and non-functional turf. By way of leading by example, by 2008, Eastern had removed all 9 acres of non-functional turf, and we installed a water-efficient, California-friendly demonstration garden for customers to tour and for the community to enjoy. Additional early and noteworthy investments Eastern undertook was the implementation in 2009 of the district's allocation-based water rate structure, a very progressive and rate-making structure at the time. Tiered rates continue to be a very important tool to signal the need for conservation. Eastern's allocation-based tiered rates represent a sophisticated rate design that is tailored based on household size and landscape need. Our water rates encourage efficient use and ensures that those who choose to overpay pay more than those who use what they need. Arguably, one of the most effective tools in our water use efficiency toolbox, our rate design has served to signal and encourage the need for conservation and efficient water use since we implemented the structure. Eastern's investments in and progress towards water use efficiency has continued in recent years as well through the launch of our award-winning, nationally recognized, accelerated retrofit program, recycled water retrofit program, which we initiated in 2015. The district has since retrofitted nearly 50 sites, irrigating more than 700,000 square feet of turf with recycled water. We have actively pursued the replacement of non-functional turf, having removed nearly 10 million square feet of non-functional turf over the past decade. Additional generous investments by the district to regional programs have accelerated water savings due to turf removal. And just this past year, Eastern launched our successful Landscape for a Living, which offers diverse resources for customers to identify rebates and further share free services to help make landscapes more efficient. As you can see, all of these efforts build off one another and complement each other. And it is through these good works and through the good works of conservation staff and a number of other departments that we are well positioned going into the future. Furthermore, because of these combined efforts and in response to the growing need for conservation and water use efficiency, Eastern has seen a dramatic decrease in per capita water use. We have seen water use reductions 38% below our baseline and 30% below the SBX7-7 target. Furthermore, despite a growing population, we continue to see a decrease in water use, per capita water use. Imported water consumption is down, and recycled water consumption and use is up by nearly 8%. So again, when it came before the board to advance legislation to address non-functional turf, we were confident in doing so, knowing that we had made a significant investment in this front, and because we have a long history of addressing water use efficiency. By way of catch-up, following the submission of our proposal for co-sponsorship to AQUA to advance non-functional turf, our request further added the element to ask for the formation of a working group to explore areas of where we can identify consensus on turf efforts. That working group was formed, and it has been instrumental in identifying a number of consensus products. Eastern and AQUA staff together and individually have conducted various briefings with DWR, state board, staff, and leadership. We met with members of the legislature to elevate the issue of non-functional turf and the need for additional funding for turf removal. As we saw, this effort has started to be fruitful with the government, with the governor including including $75 million within the initial budget that came out back in January, further signaling an interest by the administration to address turf. And we were asked, because of our leadership in this area, by a member of the legislature to prepare some areas of consensus that could be further pursued through additional budget actions. And because of the groundwork that we had laid and the active investments that we had made, we were able to produce a document in a very rapid amount of time. Which brings me to the issue at hand today: a resolution on non-functional turf removal and water use efficiency. We honor and recognize that functional turf and efficient landscape irrigation will continue to play an important role in our communities. However, due to the need to facilitate more water use efficiency, more water use efficient practices, we need to move into a more mindful era of water use efficiency, and we need to continue our efforts to change perception when it comes to efficient landscape, both within our region and in our conversations with decision makers at all levels. As our past practices and efforts point, this resolution is our next step in our decades-long journey of leadership on outdoor water use efficiency. And it is intended to focus much of what we are currently doing in our various departments into a single effort and shape a direction that has the support of the board. This policy approach will be implemented through a series of actions, first of which will be a coordinated message on the approach that we can share with local, regional, state, and federal partners to advance best practices. We will be aggressively pursuing external funding, as we always do, to support our ratepayers in turf replacement. We will promote outdoor water use efficiency region-wide with our local partners, And we will continue to speak confidently in the legislature and to the administration and advance our good work that we've done in this arena. Through this focused multi-departmental effort, we hope to continue to change public perception, continue our outstanding work on water use efficiency and demand reduction, reduce customer water bills, and continue in the area of increasing water affordability, support efforts to pursue external funding to support ratepayers as they convert their landscape, continue to demonstrate that Eastern is a leader in this area, as well as to continue to be a good steward of this limited resource, and support our local partners in the public government space as they seek to reduce lawn clippings going to the landfill. Overview of possible next steps. I'll breeze through a couple of these. With the approval of the resolution today, we will initiate a collaborative approach that will entail meeting with our local government and land use agency partners, along with business group and others, to support additional progress on legacy turf removal in public spaces and development. We've made so much progress on this front. However, with the participation and support of our land use agency partners, we can do so much more. We will continue to educate our local decision makers and partners on water efficient practices, and we'll continue to support investment that will help our region achieve conservation as a way of life. Additionally, in advancing the goals of the resolution, we plan to work with academic institutions to more thoroughly understand the relationship and quantify water savings from turf removal. Some of the actions that we could potentially look to address through a collaboration with an academic institution could be understanding how MWILO has influenced water use efficiency, determining through an informed process how much infrastructure has been deferred or reduced from the turf removal, determine where state agencies are, and understand how much non-functional turf is around these facilities. This is sort of a hard nut to crack because those that have oversight over the turf are located far away, generally. Furthermore, through this focused and multi-pronged collaborative effort to address non-functional turf management, our region will be well positioned to continue to address growth, reduce the need to invest in new supplies, support effective management of this limited resource. It complements and builds off of EMWD's legacy of good work in this area and enables Eastern to more effectively meet conservation mandates such as conservation as a way of life, and further demonstrates to decision makers we have continued to make significant investments despite our remarkable progress to ensure reliability during times of drought. So with that, the recommendation before you today is to approve and authorize adoption of the proposed resolution for policy goals for water use efficiency and turf management, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that presentation. I'm going to go right to Director Record if he has any comments on this, because I know he is a leading voice in this area.
I do, and thank you, President Pauley. And first off, just let me thank Danielle for all of her hard work, and I'm hoping that the wounds she has won't turn into scars. But I mean, this has been a great effort, and I'm surprised at some of the pushback, but maybe I shouldn't be. I would like to go back to slide 14, and today it was reported that January and February were the driest over the last 100 years in California. So I think in light of that, and in light of the fact that governor put quite a bit of money into the budget for this effort, that we really need to accelerate what we're doing. And I think that if we can, sooner than later, we'd want to get a coordinated message out, just saying that, you know, that things haven't been this bad maybe ever, and we really have to look at what the opportunities are. And for me, really, one of the few left is the non-functional turf. So, and I don't know how we could get together a program quick enough to take advantage of some of that funding early on, but and there's still a number of things that we have to figure out, and just there's all kinds of challenges still ahead of us. But I think we need to take the opportunity of this drought to accelerate and move forward as quickly as we can. I think this is a really good presentation. I'm really proud of the district and our history, and I think it's really appropriate that we're kind of leading the effort on this. I really appreciate the slides about how we've reduced our use of imported water. I'm not sure any other member of the agency has done that. So with that, I would happily move this item.
A motion by Director Record. Do any other directors have comments? Director Armstrong?
Yeah, I just wanted to see if you could clarify is who this is intended to target, because we talk about region in the resolution and the region. What's the region? Is it just the region, or is this like a statewide kind of initiative where you want to see more happening with non-functional turf?
So I think the goal of the overall ordinance is to bring together all these separate pieces of what we've already been doing. So I do feel like we've already been doing a lot at the state front. We've been doing a lot across all of Southern California and a lot across all of Western Riverside County. So that sort of brings it all together. I think it can address all those different aspects and continue to even enhance what we're already doing in those areas. I would like to think that there's more to do that in the local region. And I think that's some of the area where that goal and that messaging will definitely be beneficial.
And thank you. If I can add to that, Director Armstrong, we would like to advance our efforts both on state legislation, as Danielle has been working hard with the AQUA Legislative Committee, but as well as we want to work in parallel on a regional effort, meaning within our service area, we want to coordinate with the land use agencies, with the cities and the county, and have that conversation about legacy non-functional turf and how can we potentially develop programs to encourage and incentivize management of non-functional turf. So in our recommendation, we would like to move in parallel. The state effort that Danielle and Jolene and frankly, Director Eckert has been very much part of those conversations, both at the state level as well as with the Metropolitan Water District, who's also very interested in what we're doing, would provide us and all other water agencies better clarity in the water code as far as the authority that we have versus a land use agency authority. So I think that would be very beneficial if we can get there in terms of giving us that authority. But frankly, I just wanted to also echo Director Record's comments. Danielle's done a tremendous job. It's been a Herculean effort, and we've already achieved some of our goals in terms of just elevating the conversation statewide about this. And frankly, I believe that it's because of our efforts and Director Record's involvement that the governor did include that $75 million. So we are seen at the state level as a leader in this space, and I think it's important for us to keep pushing ahead on this issue, and there's a tremendous amount of benefit. So hopefully we addressed your question.
Thanks. Director Slauson.
Yeah, I won't say what a great job you've done because you've heard that enough, but yeah, you have done a great job. I think even some of the expanding our programs of non-functional turf removal and messaging outside of our area is beneficial to us, especially if, you know, other Met contractors reduce their water intake, right? So I understand. I think this is multi-pronged approach, and I think it has to be. So I really like that. I did have one question.
Certainly.
What is the current funding available for non-functional turf removal? I think you told me.
So Director Slauson, currently Metropolitan provides $3 per square foot, and they've recently adopted a measure to add another dollar to $4 square foot, Linnea. Is that correct?
Residential is currently $2 a square foot, and we provide an additional dollar. Metropolitan recently adopted to increase the public agency to $3 a square foot.
Okay. All right. That incentivizes. For sure.
There's a lot of innovations that we're looking and trying to determine if they could work either here or anywhere else in terms of accelerating some of the rebate repayments, looking if there's opportunities to address disadvantaged communities through more of a grant style is not the right way to put that, but front-loading those resources so it's not a reimbursement process. So there's a lot of innovations that's still left on the table that can be maximized to further incentivize turf removal.
That sounds similar to the SAPA program they had some months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Very good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think.
So, President Pauly, can I make another comment?
Sure. Go ahead.
So, as far as you know, what region are we focused on? And this is just a thought that I have that I've expressed before, but I'm very sensitive to other regions saying, don't tell me what to do, and don't you make some, you know, push some law through the state that's going to make me do something I don't want to do. I think that what I want to see the state do is give us the tools so that we as Eastern Municipal can be able to go ahead and develop a program and get some of this stuff removed. So, and, you know, there's nothing more irritating than a good example. But there are some areas that are really upset that someone would try to take their lawn and a white picket fence away. And obviously this is non-residential, so that's a really big part of it. But I just want Eastern to have the tools that we need so that we can move forward.
Excellent point.
Director Corona?
Yeah, I think all the comments so far have been great. And I think, all the work that you've done has been fabulous, and I totally support it. And I don't think there's a second yet, so I'll second.
So Director Record made the motion to pass this. The second is on Director Corona. I just have one final comment because I need to chime in and tell Danielle she's a rock star on this issue. But I agree with Director Record. I'm looking for us to be able to develop locally through Eastern our own program, the state to give us the tools and the toolbox to be able to do that. I have all sorts of ideas on what we can do to incentivize both private and public agencies to get rid of some of the non-functional turf. I'd like to explore someday, if we could, having an increased water rate for the land for the square footage of non-functional turf. I do believe pricing is always a signal to public agencies and especially to private areas that have non-functional turf. So I agree. We just need the tools in this toolbox. We'll figure it out locally. I don't want to be telling some district in Northern California how to run their operation. Like, I don't want them telling us how to run ours. But under the current legal structure, we need the tools in the toolbox to do this. So that is why I'm very pleased with what we're doing here. With that, why don't we get a roll call vote on this item?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Very good. That passes 5-0. Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you.
We will go on to item C, which is to approve and authorize contracts for consulting services with VNA Engineering for $178,000 and Wagner and Bongsangon for $25,000 for the City of Paris Water and Sewer System Consolidation Assessment and additional appropriations, $300,000. Nick, I understand you are going to present that to us today.
Yes, I'll
take it. And I probably butchered the name of one that
Everybody does.
Okay, good.
I pronounce it one way, and I'm probably butchering it as
well,
so that's okay. As you heard from Joe earlier in his report, we've already made a lot of progress. We got off to a good start working with the city in exploring the feasibility of potentially consolidating the city's water and sewer system into Eastern's. As you'll recall, we executed an MOU with the city that provides for us to work together in a collaborative way in exploring the feasibility of that potential consolidation. And it also includes a commitment to share in any costs for consultant services that we need to bring to the process to ensure that we do a thorough evaluation. As also mentioned earlier, a week ago, we had our first ad hoc committee meeting with Director Slauson, Director Armstrong as our representatives on that, and I think that was a good discussion. We talked about our roles, the process, and we provided an update as far as where we are with a number of tasks, which Joe had mentioned earlier. Two specific tasks that we need to get our arms around. One is the evaluation of groundwater rights. This is something that we looked at a number of years ago when we were exploring the potential consolidation or acquiring the sewer system. The situation has changed somewhat. There's additional groundwater rights that are available, and we need to revisit that and update that valuation. And the second item is an assessment of both the water and the sewer systems. So we collaborated with the city. We worked closely with them in identifying the scope of work, the needs to do that work, and we've identified two consultants to perform that work. Wagner Bonsignor for the groundwater rights. They were the consultants that we used the first time round, and they're going to update that evaluation and look at the additional groundwater rights. Cost to do that would be $25,000. And V&A engineering to look at the water and sewer system assessment. We've done work with V&A before, and they are very qualified to perform this work, and that the city concurred, and there's an agreement that this is the right consultant to do that work. And their fee to do that is approximately $179,000. So today we're seeking your approval to award those contracts to Wagner Bonsignor for $25,000 and V&A consultants for $179,000, and additionally appropriation of $300,000 to support this effort. The additional appropriation provides for a little bit of a contingency as we get into this work, and it also helps cover staff costs. And again, just as a reminder, these costs, consultant service contract costs, will be shared equally with the city. We have to answer any questions.
Any questions on this item?
Yep. Just along the theme of rock stars, Nick, you did a great job with that ad hoc committee meeting with the city of Paris. You really laid out a process, including, you know, the need for what we're asking for here today and the steps and the timeline. It was really clear, really understandable. I thought you did a fantastic job, and this is really what's needed to give us that fair sort of the financial parity and to know all of these things to answer the question of whether or not the consolidation makes sense. So just want to compliment you on that.
Thank you. I appreciate that feedback. Thank you.
Is that a motion?
Yeah, I'll make that motion.
Mm-hmm. I'll second it.
Motion by Director Armstrong, second by Director Slauson. Just want to make sure, Director Record, do you have any questions on this item?
No, I do not.
Very good. Let's get a roll call vote on it.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. Go on to item D, which is to approve and authorize amendments to the design services with Kennedy Jinks, Terratech, CDM Smith, and CEQA services with Woodward and Curran for the Paris North Basin Groundwater Contamination Prevention and Remediation Program. An additional appropriation of $1.6 million. Mr. Kowalski, you are going to lead us through this morning, correct?
Yes. Good morning, President Pauly, fellow members of the board. I'm happy to be here to present an update on our Paris North Basin groundwater program. Whoops. By way of background, we've recently completed a value engineering effort, and we've identified some substantial cost savings to the construction. And with that, we need to advance certain scope to implement those cost-saving measures. And with that, we'd look to advance design amendments with our three primary consultants that are working on the designs for the implementing facilities for the Paris North program. In addition to that, we're looking to advance other support services to complete the program and to continue the program through construction. By way of background of the value engineering that was completed, we look to advance refinements and just to give you a little bit of background of the proposed facilities, we have in the north wells as well as well treatment facilities, and in the south a south treatment facility and the related wells. We're now looking to centralize the treatment in one location, and convey the northerly wells to the south location to centralize the treatment. And in doing so, we look to convert the northerly treatment plant to a satellite well site, basically removing the treatment facilities. Secondly, we look to advance a new raw water pipeline, an 18-inch diameter pipeline, about 12,000 linear feet to get to the centralized location. And then centralize the treatment facility, basically convert the south treatment plant to a now centralized treatment facility to convey all the flows to one location. And in order to do that, we need to implement some new facilities. So that 18-inch water pipeline, we reached out to Kennedy Jenks, the engineer of record for our phase one and two raw water pipelines. We negotiated a scope and fee with them to advance this new pipeline for approximately $540,000. Again, this will take us through bidding support for the new pipeline. Secondly, we reached out to Tetra Tech for the northern wells and treatment facilities to convert that facility to a satellite well site, and negotiated a contract amendment with them for approximately $120,000, again, to revise the construction documents to consolidate. And then third, we reached out to CDM Smith, our engineer of record for the South Treatment Facility. Again, we'll convert that facility to a centralized facility, taking all the flows now to one location. They will update all of our plans and specs accordingly to centralize the treatment at that one location. Moreover, we look to advance other support services to complete the program, and we'll have to advance a new CEQA document for the new pipeline. So we reached out to Woodard and Kern and negotiated a scope to prepare an M&D. We negotiated a contract amendment for $85,000 for that. Further, we look to continue our effort for monitoring wells, and we'll need additional support for that. We'll need to continue our analysis to site new monitoring wells, as well as develop the necessary well drilling specs, and then continue through the site acquisition process. So we'll need an additional $360,000 to support that effort. And then we want to maintain our public outreach, so we're looking to add some additional labor budget to advance our outreach program through construction in the amount of approximately $126,000. Before I present my recommendation today, I'd like to give an update on funding. On a couple of occasions, we've submitted a request for additional funding to the state for approximately $17 million. And if approved, our funding will increase from $45 million to $62 million. And also, if approved, our deadline for construction completion will be extended from early 2023 to mid-2025. Pardon me. And now our recommendation today. One, I'd like to recommend we advance a contract amendment with Kennedy Jenks for the advancement of the Phase 3 water pipeline in the amount of approximately $540,000. Two, advance a contract with Tetra Tech for the conversion of the Well 66 site for $120,000. Three, advance a contract amendment with CDM Smith for the conversion of the South Treatment Facility to a centralized treatment facility for approximately $400,000. Four, advance a contract amendment with Woodard and Curran for preparation of environmental documents for the Phase 3 pipeline for approximately $85,000. And then our request today is to add additional appropriation of approximately $1.7 million, taking our total appropriation to date to approximately $44 million. With that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Do we have any questions, Director Slauson?
So that's just over 2 miles of 18-inch pipeline in Paris Boulevard and Ironwood?
That's the current approximate location. We are doing an alignment analysis. We're looking at various locations in close coordination with the city. So there could be a possibility of aligning that along Indian and down over to Paris and to the centralized treatment facility. So that process is underway now.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult road to work in, Paris Boulevard.
Yeah, we're going to try to avoid the intersection of SR 60 and Paris Boulevard, so we're looking very closely right now at Indian Street, so we'll see how it goes.
Okay, all right. Sounds great.
I'd like to make a motion.
I'll move approval.
Second.
Second on the motion by Director Slauson, a second by Director Armstrong. I just want to make sure Director Record
has no concerns or questions on this?
Nope.
Very good. I'd just like to say on the, since we just had a great success with the Sky Canyon Sewer Project, we're going to hope the same success for our public on this one. With that, I get a roll call vote, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes on a vote
of
5-0. Thank you, sir. Before we go to informational items, Thomas has brought to my attention, we had an important guest in the audience on one of our previous items this morning. That's Mr. Tom Jacob from Stifel. And I just want to say thank you for coming. I'm a huge proponent here of when we have vendors on important items that they come to our board meeting. I cannot thank you enough for doing that. And even though we didn't have any questions for you, it is much appreciated for you to make the trek out here to Paris. So thank you. Appreciate doing business with you. And wanted to recognize you for attending today. Very good. With that, why don't we do informational item A, Mr. Ward, and then we'll take a quick break before item B. How does that sound?
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. It's my privilege once again to present the district's report card. The period we're going to talk about today is quarter two, fiscal year 21-22. With me today is my newest business systems analyst, Nicole Perkins.
She looks familiar.
I got to tell you, she's done a great job of compiling the data, analyzing results, and she insisted that she co-present today's performance.
Very good.
So she'll be closing the presentation and take any questions the board may have. We did a kind of a drill down of this at committee level, so it means I can just do a really brief presentation today. Again, balanced scorecard. 12 measures implemented by this board in 2012. Some modifications that have occurred throughout the year, but they only occur at beginning and end of fiscal year. I can tell you that we had a very solid quarter two. We closed out well. We only have a couple things to talk about. The first one here under efficiency, water operating cost per acre foot delivered. The only exception or anomaly that you'll note is the month of December. You can see the cost spike. That's a result of two expenses that occurred in that month. One, of course, was a planned PERS contribution. The other is Edison billing. And while we've had a very successful customer billing system implementation, the Edison billing, I don't believe, went as smooth as they may have preferred. And what I mean by that is some of their bills were delayed by months, and they reconciled those expenses to MWD in the months of November and December. So that's where we see that spike for the month of December exceeding $2,840 per acre foot delivered. In this line graph, you'll see the water delivered in blue, and you can see it trends very well to our seasonal demands. However, the expenses flatlined to the months of November and December. And likewise, when we look at the service charge provided by finance, we see the PERS contribution here in light blue and the Edison billing energy cost in this purple color. And you can see how they hit our books in November and December. So the good news is we're able to utilize the system, drill down into it, understand how the costs varied, and be able to explain it to the board and to our public. So that trend and those themes of the delayed Edison billings and that PERS contributions, we saw it across all three product lines. And here you'll see the only excursion month of December for wastewater. And likewise, recycled water operating costs. Again, no real surprises. Finance did a great job of accruing the planned expenses in previous months. So our books are true. Under self-generated power, this has been somewhat of a moving target. This is the average of three self-generation power sources, our solar arrays, our microturbines, and our fuel cells. And if you recall, our fuel cells timed out. The Paris plant fuel cell went offline in December, and the fuel cell at Marino is going offline. In fact, I think it went offline in the month of February.
Yeah, February 1st.
So we saw those averages get affected by some of those intermittent performance for the fuel cell system.
But the good news is, as we look at the actual energy generated, we saw the spike occurring in October, November, December. That's the result of additional solar arrays being brought online. So, as a part of a drill down, new solar capacity added at all four of our reclamation facilities, totaling an additional 50 acres of solar arrays. Additional 30 acres under the RESBIT program is targeted for summer or fall of 2022. And you can see how those two facilities, phase three, and then the 30-acre RESBIT solar system is going to land near the Sentinel plant and the constructed wetlands. So with these systems coming online, it's estimated that 38% of the district's energy load will be met by these solar facilities. So something that district should be very proud of. As we roll into reliability, we did have one excursion, if you will. This is the only metric that's going to land on our watch list. The good news is of the 27 events, two-thirds of them were planned events as part of our regular and routine maintenance that occurs. Director Slauson, we saw a valve replacement project in October in your area extend to the next area of valves so that we could close them, replace those valves, and create a safe trench environment for the valve replacement. So we saw an extended downtime in the month of October along Hemlock. And Director Armstrong, for the month of November, a water leak repair on Bradley Road. It was a seeping leak, so it was a planned repair. We could notify the customers and get in and make that repair. Like some of the areas in Sun City Community, and when they repressurized the system, they found leak number two. And so the downtime was a little extended. So again, two out of the 3 months for quarter two exceeded the goal of keeping this measure below 8 hours, and that's why you'll see it on the district's watch list. Plant treatment reliability remains incredibly solid, exceeding our goal of 98% uptime. And here we see how each plant is performing. This, of course, affects our recycled water production and recycled water availability. Only two spills within quarter two. I say only, but one was at the Temecula plant at the headworks. We had a pipe failure there, and it resulted in a more extensive look at the headworks pipe system and the network. The status of that pipe, the age of the pipe, is going to result in some more capital project facilities occurring at the Temecula plant. Happy to report our customer satisfaction score remains solid. We're exceeding our goal of 4 out of 5 stars. In fact, we closed December at 4.5. You'll see in the month of November at 4.8. Under safety injury illness rate, this is a rolling 12-month average. Once again, we were at 1. In this case, December, we closed at 0.9. And for comparison, the industry average is at 5.0. So again, just outstanding injury illness program that we've implemented here. As we roll into our financial measure, the first is our general administrative costs as a percent of total operating costs. Even with those unexpected expenses, the months of October, November, December look solid. This, again, is our overhead, and we're performing true to our budget. And finally, a net operating margin revenue. This is dollars in minus dollars out. You'll see two things. We use a seasonal goal, recognizing how water sales affects our revenue. But then also you'll see the difference between revenue in October and expenses up, if you will, month of November. If you take those 2 months, they'll average at about 5.6, which is exactly where we would have expected to be. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Nicole Perkins for our final financial measure.
Nicole. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. I am grateful to be able to present this final metric to you all. So the final metric is our capital improvement project actual to budget, which measures how we implement our capital projects versus our forecasted budget. Our monthly goal is 75% implementation or better, and we're pleased, very pleased to report that we ended December at 89%. And this is significant because many organizations struggle to get to 75% implementation on capital projects. Sorry about that. So looking at the details, this chart shows our cumulative spend to date for the fiscal year. And as you can see, we had a slower start in the first quarter, but picked up the pace in the second quarter. So our cumulative spend at the end of December was at $48 million of the $54 million forecasted, which is the 89% we discussed. So for the fiscal year, our forecasted budget is $106 million in capital projects. So we're right on target at mid-year to meet that goal. And just as an FYI, January is tracking at about 87%. So to recap, 11 of the 12 measures are performing better than target. And just one measure made it to the watch list, the customer hours out of service. Our next quarterly update is scheduled for May 2022. And with that, we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions on our metrics and measurements?
No questions. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you all.
Director Record, any questions on this item?
Oh, I just, well, an observation that Nicole seems to be a little bit better than John. So other than that, good report. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Record.
Thank you. With that, let's take about a 10-minute break.
Okay, Nick, how are you? I was curious, was Jeff asked a question of John?
Okay, great. Okay.
Is that not uncommon?
No, that's fine. I appreciate that.
If we could reconvene our meeting. Thank you, everybody. We are on informational items. Item number 5 on the agenda. Item B, which is the Doheny Ocean Desalination Project Overview. Something I know is of interest to the board. So good morning, Linnea.
Good morning again, President Pauly and members of the board. Before I get started this morning, I do want to provide a special thanks to South Coast Water District, their general manager, Rick Shintaku, and their assistant general manager and chief engineer, who I think some of you are familiar with, Mark Cerna, provided a lot of input into this presentation. In fact, the majority of the presentation are graphics and figures that they have prepared for their outreach associated with the project. They also spent some time with me answering questions and providing me additional insight into the project. So I really want to thank them for their time, both in providing the information and as well as the a lot of the content for the presentation. And I have been communicating back and forth with Mark Cerna. He was on the line earlier today. He said he had to drop at 11, so I'm assuming he's still on. We'll provide an opportunity for additional questions at the end of the presentation, should you have some. So with that, I'll go ahead and get into the presentation. First, I wanted to provide you with a little bit of background on South Coast Water District. I think it's really important to understand the context of their considerations for an ocean water desal plant in comparison to some other agencies that are looking at ocean water desal. They are a full-service provider, water, recycled water, and wastewater. Their community is about 40,000 residents and 1,000 businesses, but really the economic driver for them is their tourism, where they see over 2 million visitors per year. Their communities include South Laguna Beach, Dana Point, and areas of both San Clemente and San Juan Capistrano. Another unique aspect of the South Coast Water District is the differences between the north areas of the county and the southern areas of the county. In the north part of Orange County, there's a large aquifer and spreading basins that allow them to replenish this aquifer. And that groundwater basin provides about 75% of the drinking water for the northern portions of the Orange County. So they rely on about 25% of imported water from Metropolitan. Starkly different in South Orange County, there are no robust groundwater basins in that portion of the county. And they actually rely on 90% of their drinking water imported from Metropolitan. And over the years, there have been regional studies that have looked at the different risk factors associated with such a strong reliance on Metropolitan for that drinking water. And the Municipal Water District of Orange County commissioned a study and actually identified a risk associated with earthquakes and other potential impacts to state water project, and have really advised that South Orange County plan for a potential 60-day outage and have an adequate water supply to accommodate a potential 60-day outage. So this just is a little bit more information on that overall regional water reliability study that was commissioned by MODOC. And really, this graphic shows in those little red X's on the graphic to the right, shows all the different locations that this study identified that were potential risks for interruptions of that drinking water supply. And they estimated the economic devastation from that outage could be close to $2 billion, and this was in 2004, if there was a significant outage for that quote-unquote 60-day period. Thus, this goal and driver for identifying a mitigation strategy for that outage. Today, South Coast Water District's water supply portfolio, the 90% that I mentioned is their drinking water supply, but if you look at holistically, other non-potable uses, they rely on Metropolitan for about 75% of that overall total water use. They do have a small portion of groundwater supply, and then, as I mentioned, they are also a recycled water provider. Looking forward as to how an ocean water desal plant may help diversify their water portfolio is shown in the pie graph here on the right, where a desal plant potentially could make up about 36% of their overall water supply portfolio, significantly reducing their reliance on Metropolitan down to 32%, compared again to 75% today. This project has a long history. There have been a lot of studies and efforts done to really advance this project to where it is today, starting with a variety of hydrogeology studies, feasibility studies associated with the technologies for conveying the ocean water into the plant. There was a pumping plant and pilot study that was performed. They have also been successful in securing grant funding. They've secured $10 million in Prop 1 grant funding, as well as $20 million from USBR funding. They've also completed their EIR certification, and most recently have performed some additional cost studies, which I'll talk about here in later slides. An overview of the Doheny Ocean Desalination Project. It is the first phase. It's a phased implementation, with the first phase being up to 5 million gallons per day of new drinking water supplies. And South Coast Water District, based on that pie chart that I showed, their board is committed to a diversified water portfolio. So there's not a goal to completely roll off Metropolitan. And so looking at that pie chart, that equates to about a 2 million gallon per day plant for South Coast Water District. In essence, 2 million gallons per day produced by that plant would be used locally by South Coast Water District customers. So that leaves in this initial phase 3 million gallons per day available for different partners. There's interest by other agencies within South Orange County, as well as regional partners, again, which I'll talk a little bit more in latter slides. Ultimately, through this phased approach, this could be a 15 million gallon per day project. And the location is in the city of Dana Point at a property that is currently owned by South Coast Water District. The project components include the actual 30-acre property that is owned, as I mentioned, by South Coast Water District, as well as the subsurface intake approach, the brine discharge facilities, as well as there's water quality benefits, And it is also adjacent to local transmission lines. So there's a lot of synergies between environmental considerations and overall connection into potential regional systems to support some of those partnerships. A lot of the debate around ocean water desal projects is really been around two main components. One is how the water is introduced into the actual treatment plant, concerns over impacts to marine life, and the other is on the brine discharge, and again, potential impacts to marine life. So South Coast Water District has really been innovative in how they have dealt with both of these somewhat controversial topics around ocean water desal, which has really resulted in a lot of support even from environmental groups that have traditionally opposed ocean water desal. In terms of the subsurface water intake system, they have proposed a slant well approach, which draws the water in from below the ocean floor, so it really minimizes the intake of marine life that, again, is often associated with the large intake structures associated with ocean water desal. The other somewhat controversial topic around ocean water desal is what happens with the brine. And ocean water desal, due to the higher levels of salinity, we operate groundwater desal here in Paris, and we see TDS concentrations 2,000, maybe 2,500. We're talking 35,000 parts per million for ocean water desal. So it takes a lot more energy, and it also has a lot lower recovery. So we only see about 50% recovery in ocean water desal compared to our groundwater desalters in that 75 to 80%. And also comparison, our purified water replenishment system, which will also use the same reverse osmosis technology, we're targeting a 92%+ recovery. So just to give you an idea of the amount of brine and the concentration of that brine that is resulting from an ocean water desal plant. But again, due to some of the unique characteristics of this project, South Coast Water District is able to capitalize on an existing ocean outfall that they are adjacent to, and that brine will be diluted with wastewater that's treated at this plant and is actually the preferred method by the California Ocean Plan for the discharge of brine. So again, allowing for support from entities that typically have been opposed to these types of projects. The other interesting aspect of this project is the financial considerations that South Coast Water District has looked at. Again, ocean water desal traditionally is viewed as one of the most, if not the most expensive water supply option that's available today. And so, as would be expected, there would be impacts to ratepayers. And so South Coast Water District's board really wanted to understand how a potential rate increase would be viewed by its residents. Again, keeping in mind some of the unique considerations for this water agency, 90% reliant on MET water for drinking water, not a lot of other opportunities, and the potential impacts to their economy should they suffer a significant interruption in their imported water supply. And so what this survey found was that 78% of the participants surveyed would be willing to pay $5 more per month for an increased reliable water supply. And this goes all the way down to 63% being willing to pay $15 more per month. And how that aligns with the two different projects that South Coast Water District's board was considering. One, initially they were looking at a two million gallon per day project, which would have increased the average bill by about $7 per month. The South Coast Board has decided not to pursue the 2 MGD and is really looking at the 5 MGD plant to capitalize on the economies of scale for the project and have encouraged staff to identify partners. And so that would result in $2 more per month for South Coast residents. And so then the other question is, how does it compare to Metropolitan's rates? So this graphic here shows a couple of different assumptions for Metropolitan rates into the future, assuming that the plant is online by approximately 2026. And now it should be noted, the medium and the high assumptions for Metropolitan are substantially lower than the increase that Joe mentioned earlier during his GM report this morning. The high is shown as a 5% escalation, with the medium being a 4.2 and low being 3%. As Joe mentioned, Metropolitan is talking about over the next 2 years an 8% increase. So the comparison to Metropolitan improves as you know, Metropolitan assumptions for escalation are potentially higher than what was assumed here. A couple of other key notes in this comparison, though, with the blue line being the project cost, and you can see it cross over the high about 20 years into the project, crossing over the medium a little further out. They've estimated that the unit cost for the water is about $1,800 a square foot. This is based on their preliminary design and some updated studies that they've done since then. But I also want to note it also assumes LRP funding from Metropolitan. And as we've seen, there have been a lot of differences between planning level and preliminary design costs and what we actually see in the bidding climate. So just a couple of caveats to that $1,800 a square foot, or sorry, $1,800 an acre foot on the unit price. A couple of other key assumptions there were that for those first few years, there's no R&R assumed in there, and also there is some backloading of the finances to account for future customers also contributing to the project. This is a quick highlight of their schedule. Main thing I wanted to point out that they are working on securing their state board permit here by the summer. That'll be followed by a coastal commission permit. They are also advancing their contract documents. They are pursuing a design, build, operate, maintain model for the project implementation. So they're working on those contract documents as well, with hoping to start actual design and then construction in early 2023. As I mentioned, they are very interested in partnerships, and the South Coast Water District Board last fall authorized staff to develop and really pursue a marketing plan with the goal of securing partnerships by summer of 2022. And those partnerships really fall into a couple different buckets. One, the local partnerships that I mentioned. There is a significant benefit, not just to South Coast Water District, but other South Coast, South Orange County water agencies as well. Many of them are in the exact same water reliability situation that South Coast Water District is. So there's substantial benefits to these other agencies during an emergency. They all are also working with potential partners to really understand the unique aspects and unique rate considerations under the various scenarios, as well as what partnering structures might look like. There's also consideration for regional partnerships. Inland agencies, like ourselves, have expressed interest in what a potential partnership might look like. Are there opportunities for a water transfer type of agreement? And would MET be open to the potential for an extraordinary supply benefit associated with these potential regional partnerships? And then Metropolitan or other wholesalers have also expressed interest in the Doheny project as well. And this is very timely for us here at EMWD. As Joe mentioned a couple of board meetings ago, we recently participated in an inland regional water supply kind of brainstorming session where ocean desal was identified as one of the many categories of potential water supplies that we may want to further explore as a region. And with that, I would love to take any of your questions, and I can also check to see if Mark is still on. And I'm getting a nod from Shayla that he appears to still be on.
Very good. Do we have any great presentation, first of all? Do we have any questions to Director Armstrong?
Yeah, I have some comments. It's a great presentation, and I know we saw it at the Operations and Engineering Committee, and it's really good. And I had a good meeting with our general manager on Monday, and we talked about this a little bit. So, we're at Eastern, we're about 40% built out, and so we've got a ways to go, and we're close to 100,000 acre feet a year in demand. So you just double it. We need another 100,000 acre feet in the future. And I don't think looking to roll off of MET is a consideration that we need to do, but we do need to still find ways to diversify and improve our resiliency and reliability of our supply. And I think a project like this is a really good alternative to consider, to actually consider Eastern participating in it. The cost of Ocean Desal is very expensive, but you can see on this one, it's really attractive in comparison to some of the other Ocean Desal projects. And you can imagine it's only going to get more expensive in the future as well. It's a small amount. If they're looking for a 3MGD partner today, that's roughly 3,000 acre feet a year. It's not a lot, but it's a little something. And I think that whether it's a regional look from the four different agencies together or if it's an individual look, I think we should seriously look at it and not potentially miss an opportunity that could go away shortly. So I would support staff looking even further at it and really coming back with a recommendation whether or not it makes sense. I know it'd be more expensive than our next alternative, but in the long run, it might be a good piece. And the other thing is, from my CalDesal meeting Monday, I think this project is going in front of the San Diego Regional Water Quality Control Board for consideration in a week or two. And I wonder if we shouldn't maybe provide a support letter for the project as well. Might be something just to look at if you haven't looked at it yet, maybe to consider.
I'll definitely follow up with Mark on that.
Sure, absolutely. We appreciate the feedback, Dr. Armstrong, and we'll connect with Mark Cerna to see if there's any support we can lend. But I just want to go back to your comment. We agree that this is a good project to track. And we, as Linnea mentioned, this offers significant benefit to the South Coast Water District and to the residents of South Orange County. From our perspective, as Linnea mentioned, one of the things that we would want to take a look at, if we were to consider some sort of a transfer, is the extraordinary supply designation that would be provided by Metropolitan. In the absence of that, essentially, a regional partner would be paying $1,800 an acre foot for MET imported water versus the lower rate that is currently available to us. So we need to understand better where Metropolitan is decide as far as that designation. And I know their general manager was actually visiting with South Coast recently to better understand the project. I think this project really falls well within the overarching regional study that I know President Pauli and yourself have been involved with. And we are planning to have another meeting, hopefully in April, to get the four agencies back together. As you know, there's other opportunities that are available to us. There's water storage opportunities. There could be potentially water transfers, as well as a cleanup of groundwater, contaminated groundwater, expansion of desalinization. So there could be a number of regional opportunities that I think we should take a look at and really understand the pros and cons as compared to this particular opportunity. But I don't disagree that this is a very intriguing opportunity that we should track, but I also believe that we should look at it in the framework of other opportunities that may be available to us as a region.
Yep, and just to follow up, I would say, too, that I fully understand that. I don't think we should not look at any alternatives, but I don't think we should discount alternatives until we look at everything else either. And but in the future, we need more supply. Eastern needs more supply. The Colorado River is oversubscribed today. So, you know, where are we going to get more supply from the Colorado River? The State Water Project, things need to happen up there for sure to improve the reliability of that, and I agree with all of that. But this, when you talk about ocean desal, you're talking about, in my mind, a new supply, something new that's not out there. And we have 100,000 acre feet of new supply that we need in the future. So to me, that's part of the consideration, regardless of the cost. It's the supply. So anyways, thanks.
I would agree with everything Director Armstrong said. I would add one thing on the survey they did. I think having a, you know, hypothetical, would you agree to this, not really a good survey, I don't think, because as water supplies become more restricted, or in the event there was a major breach in the Delta, I think, you know, all, you know, everything's on the table. I would be willing to pay $100 more a month if I had to have water. Just an example.
I wish I had your wallet.
Well, Director Slauson, if I may, I personally have a lot of history with this project myself, and several years ago, you know, when the drought before the last one ended, this project kind of took a back seat. And I think that there was a lot of sensitivities to this perception of how customers would react. And I think that was really the driver for it, because a lot of council members and others, you pulled back their support. And again, that was probably about, I want to say 10 years ago or so. And so I think that's where the sensitivity to that came from, is just wanting to reinforce, you know, that, yeah, that this was still a viable opportunity from that standpoint.
Okay, and not to dig on Orange County residents, but this is a kind of a wealthy community. Okay, that's all I have.
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said so far, and you know, and Dave's comment about hey, they may be willing to pay more. Well, that's absolutely right. When you supply and demand, and when you haven't got it, you know, you're going to want it. So I did have a question on the kind of the process of the desal. So they're going to pull the water out, they're going to RO it, and they're going to take it down to zero. And then are they going to blend back? Are they going to blend back to bring the TDS, bring it up slightly? I mean that's usually what's done with reclaimed water. You know, you blend back because you don't need to have zero TDS. What's the plan on that? Or do they have a plan?
I'm sure they have a plan. Mark, are you still on by chance?
Yeah, hi, Linnea. Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yes, loud and clear.
Good. Yes, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Yes, just to respond to the question, the idea would be to stabilize that water. Yeah, we would take the TDS down to very low levels, but then we would also bring it back and essentially condition that water to essentially make it a stable, non-corrosive, essentially match met water quality parameters. But the expectation is that the TDS levels coming back or coming from the desal facility would be at a lower TDS level than met, generally the average met waters. So it would be a slight improvement in terms of TDS, or reduction in TDS, but ultimately we'll be matching met water quality standards.
Well, I'm glad that it's going to be better, because there are times when met water gets really terrible. And so, anyway.
I apologize. Is there a question? I missed that. Sorry.
No. Just a comment. So.
Director Recker, do you have any comments on this presentation?
I do. Thank you. I agree that we certainly need to look at every opportunity for a new water supply. No question about that. I have to, you know, try to get my arms around a graph that shows the price of water and how quickly this project will be under the met rate. You know, we have some real challenges in California, since by 2030 won't be able to buy anything but an electric car. They're already saying that you can't run your air conditioner during the summer, and we're decommissioning the Diablo nuclear power plant. I don't know where all this power is going to come from. So I'm not trying to be negative here. I just want to be really objective about you know, what's involved and you know, how it's going to work. Now, certainly if there was some sort of guarantee or assurance that it would be under the MET rate by that when those lines cross, then it would be crazy not to to get involved. And as I said, I certainly want to look at it fully and see how it would work. There are some questions that I have if it's going to be structured in the way that the Carlsbad plant with the Water Authority is, where it's take or pay, and so you have your most expensive supply of water being your base supply, then that, you know, raises some questions. But, you know, certainly there aren't that many opportunities for new water supplies going forward, so I'm all in favor of really vetting this and seeing how it would work.
Great comments, Director Record. Mark, if you're still on, I know that South Coast Water District has looked at alternative power supplies, recognizing that this will be an ongoing challenge. Can you provide Director Record a little bit of insight into that?
Sure, Lynette, yes. So we had done some previous power supply alternatives analyses, and we did a more recent one to look at. So ultimately, as part of our water cost, our cost of water kind of updating in this past year, so we did do a little more thorough analysis of what kind of options we have out there, as in addition to looking at the power off the grid and refining those numbers to get a real good handle on what those costs are going to be today and in the future. We also looked at alternative methods of bringing on-site power generation and what kind of innovative opportunities are out there, whether it's generation, self-generation on-site with engines, or looking at fuel cells, looking at, of course, solar and battery storage. Those were all considerations. And ultimately, what we ended up doing was we saw that there were definitely some opportunities for us to reduce overall energy costs for the desal project. What we ended up doing in our cost of water analysis was to be a little bit more conservative and assume that we're going to use SDG&E grid power because the power is there, it's available, at least, and it's structurally, infrastructure-wise, is there to support the project up to 5 MGD. In the future, the 15 MGD project, there would be some more infrastructure improvements that would be needed from the grid. But again, that would be down the road if we were to go down to a larger facility. And we would then also consider other options of power generation and looking for lower cost options. So our intent is to continue to look for lower power cost options that might be available to us, whether it's on-site, self-generation, we've allocated space for that. But we will continue to refine that and look at on-site solar, look at battery storage. Those are things we've been already drilling down into a little more further as we move forward with the project. So that's definitely part of the equation to ultimately try to reduce the unit cost because power is such a large component of that. Over.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, with all due respect, I think that the amount of power that these plants use is, I don't think people really understand the magnitude. So I don't know how much land you would need, especially in a populated coastal area, to do solar and batteries and all that stuff. I don't want to be negative, but I want to be very objective and conservative, as you said, because to me this is the biggest issue. So look forward to the discussion.
Thank you, Director Record. I just have a couple comments here, and again, I agree with everything that's been said on this. You know, as the crow flies, we're sitting 37 miles from this building here is the largest collection of water molecules on the planet Earth. And as we talk about stresses on the Colorado River, et cetera, we are going to have to figure out how to use some of those water molecules for our consumption inland here. So I do appreciate some opportunities. I know that the four Southwest Riverside County water districts now have a working group. We are trying to come up with what are some more supply issues that balance out with our conservation issues here so that the next generations living in this area
will have plenty of water for human consumption and agriculture consumption. So I do think we need to look at every opportunity that comes along. I think this is a great place to maybe have some further look at this and come back to the Ops and Engineering Committee and maybe give them some more direction before bringing it to the whole board. But I do appreciate bringing these opportunities to the board because I think I don't want opportunities to go by and think, well, we didn't even take a look at it, because we are now in an era, as we're doing with the turf removal, we're having to really start to think outside the box here as the stresses on the Colorado River and the State Water Project continue. So I do appreciate you guys bringing this to the board for consideration. A great presentation. Look forward to hearing more of it.
Thank
you very much. With that, we will go to our calendar review. I do know Director Record has to leave us at 11:30. I do know we have closed session, so we will
try. Kelly?
Yes.
We skipped the receive and file.
Oh, you're right. We did. Thank you. We did. Don't move. We have a receive and file reports. I'm going to make a motion to approve all those.
So moved.
Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I have two events for your consideration today. One is the Aqua Legislative Symposium. It is a virtual event that is next Thursday, March 10th from 9 to 12:30. If anybody is interested, please let me know. The flyer is attached to your packet. The second event is the Water Reuse Symposium on Demand. It is a post-event. It's a virtual event that goes from March 21st through April 30th. EMWD is a sponsor, and we have 6 registrations available. So those are kind of like you just register, and then you pick and choose the days between that period of time to go in and review speaker information and presentations. So additionally, WRCOG has announced their Save the Date for their 31st Annual General Assembly, which will be Thursday, June 23rd at Pechanga Resort and Casino. So all those flyers are attached to your calendar event. On page 2 is the board master calendar. Please let me know if you have any changes or additions to the master calendar for the next couple weeks. And then on page 3 is the conferences and who is participating. If you're interested in attending anything or further information, please let me know. Moving along, additionally, on page number 3 is the regular scheduled board meetings and committee meetings. Everything is still in order and set to go. If anybody has any changes or additions, please let me know. And then also on page 4 is the interagency meetings scheduled for the next 3 months. And then lastly, an early reminder that the EMWD offices are closed on Monday, May 30th for Memorial Day. So,
very good.
That is all.
Thank you so much. We will go to the director's reports, activity reports, starting with Director Armstrong.
The Quail Valley Septic to Sewer Task Force, that meeting went really well. I know it's being led by the regional board, but really EMWD staff has done a tremendous amount of work on this in terms of identifying alternatives as well as some funding sources. And so a lot of good effort moving along on that one. The City of Paris ad hoc, that's already really been discussed. So just one more time, say Nick, I thought did a great job of corralling everybody and leading everybody through it. Retirement Trust Committee, really kind of two things there. One was discussing the approach to making the initial $15 million deposit into the trust. And I think our consultant PFM is evaluating the timing of that given you know current situation and conditions, and so we'll might learn more from them.
I have the outcome. Yes, the committee met and they support the 3 installments over a period of time due to the current market situation.
So there'll be $5 million installments made into that, and so that will be funded and ready to go. And then we also discussed the OPEB and the investment policy asset allocation and, I guess, performance expectations on that. So that's something that will be coming back in the future to the board. CalDESAL, really that debriefed on the conference that we had, you know, it's about two-thirds of normal attendance, and so there's a lot of brainstorming on what to do on that. That was a virtual conference, and also reviewed a few assembly bills that affect both brackish water desal and a study on desal for the water board to consider. Had a good meeting with our general manager, good update there. And then the last item, the economic analysis on the CFDs. Really appreciate the hard work that our consultant did and that our staff contributed. It was very educational for me, and I know we're going to bring those results back in the next month or so, but I think it'll be really good information for the entire board, and I really appreciate the effort. I learned a lot, so that's my updates.
All right. Thank you very much, Director Corona.
Yes, all I have this meeting is my monthly meeting with the general manager, and that was a great meeting as always.
Okay, very good. I did not attend the IE Works board meeting. I was not available for that. I did have a good meeting with Laura on some of just the administrative stuff, updating on some of the how we're doing with our billing rollout, et cetera, with our new system. That's always good. Director Armstrong covered most retirement trust committee. Again, just kudos to staff and our consultants on that. I mean, I mean the fact that we got this going in under a year, and the fact that this is going to benefit all of our employees as helping with retirement is good. And I credit Director Armstrong for day one of getting here, of giving that idea to us, and the fact that it's fully implemented now is amazing. So thank you for that. Riverside County Task Force had a good discussion, some guests on grant opportunities, and we had one of our folks here at Eastern participate in that. That was a good meeting. Him at San Jacinto Water Master just kind of went over some general business, not a lot to report from. The legal counsel did give us an update on a rare case in California currently being litigated about water masters in general. So that was kind of interesting. And then yesterday I participated in a call with the IE Works leadership. It is developing how we can integrate ourselves into that. April was part of that call. They have some great ideas. Again, I'm a big proponent of helping get people, especially from our area of some of the lower socioeconomic challenged young people into the water industry. We need that labor force, and I'd love to develop local folks here that want to come and be great Eastern employees in the future. We are working on figuring out their governance structure so that we can participate more with them, but I look forward to being part of that. That is my report. Director Record?
So the only report I have is the Metropolitan Committee meetings on February 22nd. And I think the most important part was, Joe mentioned the second workshop for the rate setting process. And I've been pleased with staff presentations and the thoroughness of it. And also, it's been good input from board members and good discussions, which we haven't really seen a lot of, unfortunately, over the last 18 months. So we still have a couple of workshops to go, but you know, the only thing that really disappoints me is that it looks like 8% might be the minimum increase. There's so many challenges out there. So that's my report.
Very good. Thank you for that. And then Director Slauson.
Yes, thank you. I did not attend the Marina Valley Chamber of Commerce Wake Up. Attended the meeting with the Paris Ad Hoc with Mayor Vargas and Rita Rogers, Councilwoman, on the consolidation or the possible purchase. I did attend SAPA, and we approved a consent calendar. And we were going to go over the PFAS, sort of a regional analysis, but that was deferred. And I attended the Water Task Force program and on grants, and it was Vincent Lopez from our staff, along with DWR and Gray from WRCOG, gave an update. And I attended the RCCD Foundation on 222, and we approved nomination candidates. I think that's it.
Very good. Thank you for that. We will go to director's comments and future agenda items. I'm going to start off, while not a director, an important integral part of this organization. That's our legal counsel, who asked me that to allow him to make an announcement.
Oh, I just wanted to let the board know that my partner Keith Lemieux and I are going to be taking a water practice and joining another firm. The firm is Allishire and Winder, based in Orange County. The main office is in, I believe, Irvine. And we feel it's a better move for us. It provides us more support on the litigation front and on the personnel and labor matters. And we hope to get the board's blessing next meeting. We're going to work with Joe to put a contract before you on March 16th. And, looking forward to that discussion.
Very good. Appreciate that. Any other director's comments or future agenda items? Director Schlosser?
Yeah, I did have one. In my office, we're sort of in close quarters, and there's an engineer, another land surveyor, my son, and he is also on the Beaumont Cherry Valley Water District Board. So he's attending a virtual meeting. I forget what it was, San Diego Colonial Pass or something more regional. And he came over to me and said, is Maya Mawad related to Joe? I said, well, yeah, as a matter of fact. So I went over and, yeah, there she was. She was representing, I'm not sure which agency even, but she was there talking. So it was small world. And John Ward's son works at Beaumont Cherry Valley Water District, too.
We have a firewall at home, Director Slosser. Yeah, we don't.
It's like a conspiracy.
The Mawad family.
She taught you that word.
The Mawad family is a powerful force in Southern California water, we know. I had one, and this isn't an agenda item, but just a comment. And Joe did such a wonderful job at the Winchester MAC a while back that it has spurred some people approaching me about how we could potentially get additional sewer capacity in the Winchester core. And I said, that might be something that we could do with the CFD. So, Joe, if you would allow me, could I put a small group of those people together, maybe meet with Laura and Thomas and give them an overview of what it might take to do something like that? I would appreciate that.
Sure, I absolutely would love to learn a little bit more what the needs are in the community. And as we shared at the Winchester MAC, we did complete a focused planning effort to look at the Winchester MAC and how potentially water and sewer infrastructure may be expanded. But we would love to continue that conversation and better understand the needs of the community.
I think these folks are kind of interested in, you know, I understand that we would have to pay for some of the infrastructure and how a CFD or something like that would work, and sure, just kind of a 101. So I will work with perhaps Laura to put that together with Thomas.
Absolutely.
I would appreciate that very much. Thank you. Understand legal counsel, we do have a need for closed session today.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Mr. President, could I jump in for a minute?
Oh, I'm sorry, Director Rackett. I apologize.
No problem. I'm not going to attend closed session. I think we covered most of that in executive committee. I just would like to say that I really like Zoom better than Teams, so whoever brought that to us, I appreciate it. It works so much better. So with that, I will sign off and talk to you guys later.
I would concur that Zoom is better than Teams, is my personal preference too. So thank you, Director Record, for attending today. Appreciate that. So we will need a – can we change over to closed session? We'll do it in this room?
Yes, we will.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we'll be meeting pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss anticipated litigation with 19 claims.
Very good. All right, we have our secretary back. We are going back onto open session, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're good to go. All right. Go ahead. Go ahead, sir. Can we get a report out of closed session by our legal counsel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss anticipated litigation on several claims. Report was given to the board. No reportable action arose from this closed session. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. With that, we will stand adjourned until 9 o'clock on March 16th. Thank you.
Thank you.